Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-ah, the Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Ron Vitello, former National Chief of our Border Patrol. Then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Ron Vitello. Ron was the National Chief of our Border Patrol under President Trump. To make an understatement, he's very aware of the problems we're facing because of the invasion across our southern border. So welcome, Ron. Thanks for joining us.
No, Dennis, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Ron, you spent basically most of your adult life in the Border Patrol. Tell us about when and why did you join? What was it like?
Yeah, it was amazing. I had a great run in the Border Patrol, met lots of hardworking men and women. I started in the Border Patrol in 1985. I was going to a community college near my home in San Diego. And one of the instructors there was a former police commissioner. And he said, hey, look, if you're going to get in law enforcement, you need to think about going into the federal system. And he was advocating for two organizations, one of which was the Border Patrol, because they teach you how to speak a different language. And a couple of weeks later, probably planned by him, but unknown to us, recruiters came by, dropped off the cards for testing, and they talked all about how great it was to be a Border Patrol agent. And I was fascinated by it as a 21-year-old. And here I am. I signed up just like they said. And it was a great experience. 33 years in the uniform.
So when you gain in, obviously you went through, to use my military terminology, some basic training and some orientation. About how long was that?
Yeah, it was 18 weeks it's 19 today, but it's 18 weeks at the Border Patrol Academy at the time was in Glencoe, Georgia, just about an hour north of Jacksonville, Florida, on the coast near Brunswick, Georgia, for folks that are listening. Great place to learn how to be an agent. 18 weeks of Spanish, immigration law, constitutional law, lots of pass-fail courses, including driver training, which I later instructed. But yeah, you get to know people in a very specific way when you spend 18 weeks with them doing hard things, taking tests and running 6 miles a day and all those kind of things that you do in a Border Patrol Academy. Great experience.
I believe it. Basically, you're in uniform protecting our country. I was in uniform, different uniform, still same country. So we're talking about very much the same thing. When you got to your first station, what was it like? What do they expect you to do? What's the normal thing?
Yeah, so I started in Laredo, Texas. And to be honest, I didn't know where it was before they sent the letter and saying, you need to be here a couple of days before the academy. And, at the time, Laredo was kind of a sleepy border town, very entrenched with the relationship with Mexico. Trade with Mexico is sort of the town business. And it was great. You got down there. I became part of a station that had like about 88 other agents in it. And the first several weeks on the job, you're joined up with a journeyman agent. Who basically tells you all the things you need to know about how to succeed, tests your Spanish, gives you an idea of how to do the job, and you're side by side for several weeks getting evaluated by the journeyman cadre there. And it was amazing. Laredo's one of those places where all of the things the Border Patrol does is there. So, downtown foot patrol, working on the river, sign cutting, which is, looking for footprints out in the great wide open, traffic checkpoints, all of the things that are represented by the activity of the Border Patrol are part of Laredo's operational conditions. And so it was a great place to learn how to do the job.
That makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Ron Vitello. Ron, you dealt with them. In your opinion, what is the benefit to our nation of allowing illegal aliens into our nation? Is there any? I can't think of one.
No, there is none. They themselves get taken advantage of by unscrupulous employers, smugglers, and the cartels that are charging them for their journey into the United States. Yeah, no, it's a terrible situation that we find ourselves in. And, you know, we can do better. We had a situation where we can control the border not that long ago. And we need to get back to a situation where we're protecting that border. We're giving the men and women of the DHS frontline the tools they need to keep us safe.
Okay. You obviously worked your way to the top. And what were the challenges you faced as chief? The challenges the people on the front lines face is one thing, but when you get at or near the top, your challenges are different. Talk about those.
Yeah, the big challenge when I was there was morale was in the toilet. And you can say that about a lot of institutions, but it was very true at the time. We didn't call it this at the time, but we were being attacked by the administration, the Obama administration at the time. They went after pay. They went after overtime for agents. The sequester was going to put everybody on the beach for a couple of days without pay. And that was the biggest challenge. I worked with Congress, both in the House and the Senate, both Democrats and Republicans, to get a new pay reform package authorized for agents, which really lifted their spirits. You know, and the challenge operationally for the men and women on the front line is they don't have enough of what they need to do the job. And so that was always sort of our quest. What was my goal when I was the chief of the Border Patrol, the top career position, was to make sure they had the tools that they needed to do the job. And those tools are simple things like horses and ATVs, et cetera, but also sophisticated things like towers that have cameras and radar on them, just to get them the ability to do their job the best way possible. This is a group of very patriotic, hardworking men and women. And so you get the right tools in their hands, they can do just about anything.
You know, that's a really good point. During your time, were Border Patrolmen very often physically attacked, fists or any other kind of way?
Yeah, it happens occasionally. I'll give you an example. Like, the job is, you know, for most agents is to stand between where the border is and the rest of us. And so, you know, on a fence line in South Texas, or, you know, at a traffic checkpoint in Alamogordo, New Mexico, they have no idea who they're going to meet on the trail, you know, coming from Mexico or coming from wherever, because they're not all people from Mexico these days. But it's your job to confront them. It's your job to say, hey, you know, this is the United States Border Patrol. I'm a federal officer. Can I have your name and, you know, where you're going? Can you, do you have documents to be in the United States? That could be a drug smuggler. That could be a terrorist. That could be somebody who was meaning to do harm to the rest of us. But those agents stand on those posts, wait on those fence lines, having no idea who they're going to encounter. And so, yeah, sometimes that ends in physical altercations. Sometimes that ends in worse things. The Border Patrol lost about 100, almost 200 agents in the history since 1924.
So you're telling me, just like the police officers in my city, every day they put on their uniform and every day they put their life on the line to protect us. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. They are out there serving and protecting and really not knowing, you know, what their day is going to bring them.
You know, I refer to police officers and your people not as our brothers in arms, but as our first cousins in valor, because every day they put their lives on the line protecting our nation. And it sounds like I've got an accurate description of Border Patrol people too, don't I?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I would like your listeners to think about what they do each and every day and pray for them when they can.
Yes, sir. Well, there's a lot more to talk about our southern border, and Ron is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some deep knee bends. Not deep knee. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Ron and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
The Iraq War is more than 20 years old, and troops are still on the ground in Iraq. But why?
For too long, lawmakers have sent American troops to Iraq and beyond in support of vague missions that don't tie to a vital national interest.
At Concerned Veterans for America, we're translating our unique experiences as veterans to call for a better foreign policy that makes Americans safer and more prosperous.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Ron Vitello, the former chief of our Border Patrol. Okay, Ron, what's your perspective of our border situation now? You're obviously not there, but you must know most of the people there, and you probably, because you've been there, you can see it from a perspective that people like me can't. What's the border situation like now?
Well, we're in a terrible situation in which, you know, between 5 and 10,000 people are entering the country illegally across that border on our border with Mexico every single 24 hours. It's been like that for quite some time. This administration has made terrible choices about how we do border policy and what enforcement regime exists. And so we're seeing the largest surge on the southwest border than we've ever seen. And what that does is it enriches cartels in Mexico to the tune of, you know, millions and millions of dollars a week. And, you know, we're all suffering the effects of it. I think your listeners know very well, you know, the complaints out of places like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Denver, Miami, et cetera. The cities are now seeing the burden that, you know, large numbers of illegal aliens who cross the border and are released by our federal government to go wherever they want, it's putting a real burden on the cities and towns all across America.
Yeah, there aren't any illegal aliens that I'm aware of around where I live in West Michigan, at least not yet. But they don't speak our language. They don't know our culture. They don't necessarily have any employment skills. Assuming that you'd like to help them, I mean, what do you do? Welcome them into your house? Well, basically, when we welcome them into our country, it's no different than welcome them into our house. This is where we live. This has got to be a really tough situation for those kind of people. I know that's not what you have to deal with in the Border Patrol, but the communities in the United States have got to be putting up with some really tough stuff, not counting the ones that beat up a couple of New York police officers and got released. This is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally avoidable, right? Like I said, this administration has made terrible decisions on the policy at the southwest border. And, you know, to talk about the cartels, you know, they traffic in humans. They're the worst kinds of people on the planet. But that doesn't, you know, like when the Border Patrol can't do its job, when there are not enough men and women out there patrolling and protecting us, cartels have their way with all the things that they do. And they bring this poison, namely fentanyl, into the country, all the other kind of drugs. And, you know, America loses in a very big way. We've had, you know, hundreds of thousands of young men and women who have died from fentanyl poisoning or fentanyl overdose. And that's because these cartels basically have their way. They are controlling the border, not our government, not because, you know, they're great people, but because, again, this administration has made the worst choices possible on what our border policy is and should be. And the people in the pipeline are at great risk. They're trafficked by these cartels. Young women are abused on the journey. Everyone is have to deal with on the journey, you know, corrupt government officials throughout the pipeline from where they start all through Mexico. And many of them will settle in the worst neighborhoods in our country and be preyed upon by some of the same gangs that brought them here or they were fleeing home to get away from.
Or maybe they'd join those gangs, huh?
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, no better president than Joe Biden if you are in the Taliban or run a Mexican drug cartel, because he's given you the opportunity to make more money than you thought possible trafficking in humans.
You know, you raise a good point. Why would our nation or anybody, but our nation want to do anything that would strengthen something as a group as horrible as the Taliban or as horrible as these cartels. Why would we even consider doing that? I can't imagine that. Yes, even if there's a justification for bringing some of these people in, why would we let it happen in a way that is benefiting some of the most horrible people in the world?
Well, it's a very good point, right? Joe Biden can't claim to be a patriot or that he loves Americans or America while he sits on his hands and watches the death and destruction that occurs in many places, including our Southwest border. I don't have the imagination for, you know, what's in his mind, because, you know, we've heard recently that may be a very difficult thing to understand. But obviously, they could care less about the men and women that are in the pipeline and less about, you know, the effects all across the United States, including what happens every day at the border.
Yeah, this is beyond nuts. Wow, this is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Ron Vitello. Okay, Ron, I know you have a plan to help fix this issue, and you want to serve in the Congress. Tell us about your plan. What would you do if you get elected? What can we do?
Yeah, thanks for that. I am running for the United States Senate seat. We're all going to vote in November of 2024 for the president and several United States Senate seats. So as a Republican in the state of Virginia, I am challenging for the nomination to run against Tim Kaine in the general election. I'm not a politician. I'm a first-time candidate. I've never been in politics. I was a federal government employee. I swore an oath to the American people and the Constitution very young in my life. Near the end of my career, President Trump nominated me to be the director at Immigration and Customs Enforcement. People know it as ICE. And I had a situation in which I was asking senators for their vote. And so, you know, my time in Washington at the headquarters gave me a good insight of what happens on the Hill, and asking people for their votes, a very unique thing in my career. And so what I realized is we don't have enough people in that setting that care about America, that swore an oath to serve and live up to that oath. And so it's my attempt to give back in a very different way, but with the same mindset of serving the American people, upholding their constitutional rights, and doing it not for the purpose of lining my pockets or being, you know, the trappings of the office, but in fact, serving the American people like I did for 34 years in government.
I love that. How can listeners who'd like to learn more or support you, how can they get in touch with you? How can they plug in?
Yeah, so they can go to my website. Thanks for that. It's chiefvitello4senate.org. It's chiefvitello4senate.org. There's a number of ways you can contribute to the campaign. Financially, you can sign up as a volunteer. We're in the process now of access to the ballot, so people can sign. People who live in Virginia, residents, can sign my ballot petition so that I can get on the ballot for the Republican nomination. But yeah, people go to chiefvitello4senate.org. Scroll down on the donate page. There's several ways you can do that. We use the WinRed infrastructure. We use Anadot infrastructure. And, you know, if people want me to spend all the money they send, they can send a check to the P.O. box that's listed there if you scroll down.
Ron, thank you. Thank you for sharing your insights today. Thank you for your commitment to continue serving our nation. I sincerely hope you're successful in your run. Our nation needs people in Congress like you. Thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will share about the Battle of the Month, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you are seriously giving some thought to buying gold and silver to keep your financial future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Hey, HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the battle of the month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother. Glad you're on the team.
Well, thanks. Always a pleasure to talk about the history of warfare with you.
It is. Chris, as I normally do, give us a quick summary of your time in Mother Army.
Okay, well, I went to our same rock-bound Highland home, West Point, and commissioned as an aviation officer and did all the normal aviation good officer junior assignments, company command a couple times, battalion staff and all that. And I guess my big highlight was being a battalion commander, taking a unit to Iraq during the surge, which, as I've said before, led to some nice opportunities later on because the unit did so well for the Joint Special Operations Command. And then I got promoted and commanded a brigade where I really just sent units back and forth to Iraq and Afghanistan. And all of a sudden, I find myself being a general and commanding the NATO headquarters in Bosnia. And then worked on the Army staff for a while at the Pentagon and worked at combatant command in NORTHCOM. It was a really wonderful, fulfilling career. Really enjoyed it.
You know, Mother Army is a great place to serve.
It really is.
At least it was back in those ancient days when you and I were there.
Yeah, I've got a son, and as you know, still in the Army, and he still enjoys it. So it's still a good place to serve.
Good deal. Okay, the Battle of the Month is a battle that no Americans participated in, right? Stalingrad?
Yep, we're going to talk about the massive Battle of Stalingrad, World War II.
Yeah, it sure was huge. It may have been one of the biggest battles in the history of the world.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, this happened over 5 months of just a meat grinder slugfest in this rubble city of that once was a great city of Stalingrad.
Indeed. Okay, take us there, bro.
Okay, so this is World War II, Stalingrad. The reason we're going to talk about it because this is probably the most important turning point of World War II. Actually, it's debatable, but Americans aren't familiar with the Eastern Front in World War II. But the fact that Stalin stopped Hitler at Stalingrad changed the entire war, and it changed it rapidly. So this thing unfolds. The battle itself is from August 23rd of 1942 to February 2nd of 1943. So 5 months of fighting in and around Stalingrad. Why we should know this battle, as I often point out, I think it's important. As I said, turning point of World War II, massive defeat for Germany. It really shook the core of the nation. I think this was the first time that German citizens said, oh my God, we might actually lose this war. And then, you know, operationally, the Eastern Front was finished. I mean, after Stalingrad, Hitler's forces were just in a slow fighting withdrawal all the way eventually back to Berlin. So this was really a turning point. Also, it was arguably the most successful large counterattack in the history of warfare, which I'll explain. So let me give you the overview. You ready for it?
Go for it.
Okay. So got to set the stage. So after Hitler failed to knock out Britain from the war in 1940, with the Battle of Britain and the Blitzkrieg and all that, he turned his attention east. He was hoping to crush the Soviets quickly so he could once again focus in the West against the British and what he knew was going to be the Americans coming into the war. So in June of 1941, he launches the largest invasion in history called Operation Barbarossa. You've heard of that.
Uh-huh.
massive invasion of the Soviet Union. So he has 3.5 million soldiers in three army groups across a 1,000-mile front. And they are racing towards objectives in the north, in the center of Moscow, and in the south, along the Don River. So after early successes, because his blitzkrieg tactics were very successful, even though the Soviets had prepared for invasion somewhat, they were getting knocked back and surrounded and captured and destroyed. But just like Napoleon learned in 1812, the weather started to interfere. Autumn rains, and then the winter really slowed the Germans down. Supply lines were screwed, and they had basically bogged down and come to a stop. Soviets counterattack, and things were going good, but the Germans recovered. So things are a little bit of a stalemate now. In the spring of 42, even Hitler says, okay, I can't do all three army groups with equal priority. I'm going to prioritize the South. So he's going to go after the Caucasus oil fields to deprive the Soviet Union of oil and also get his hands on the supply. So on 28 June 1942, Army Group South, now that's his priority, Army Group South, attacks with 1 million men and 90 divisions. They're going to seize the Caucasus oil fields and protect the northern flank of the attack. That northern flank protection mission morphs. We'll talk about that in a second. So Hitler gets greedy with his early successes because he's rolling over Soviet Union forces in the south. So now he changes his entire mission. And Army Group South now gets split to go northeast to see Stalingrad and south to do the Caucasus oil fields. So the Soviets push back, and Stalingrad now becomes this massive defensive stand. Stalin realizes it's the key to everything, and he says, hold at all costs. So Stalin's rushing in reinforcements as the Germans are approaching Stalingrad. They're mobilizing reserves. They're fortifying the city. Don't ever underestimate the Russians' ability to mobilize forces to defend their territory. So the Germans are on the outskirts. They stall in August of 42. Now the Caucasus down further south begin to stall. The oil fields are destroyed. Tenacious fighting along the Caucasus Mountains. So Hitler goes all in on Stalingrad. But what he's done is he's traded his successful maneuver warfare, which has served him so well, this blitzkrieg, and he trades it for this urban combat, which really favors the Soviets. It was a real fatal error. So Stalingrad now turns into a meat grinder. Block by block, sewer by sewer, the Soviets were tenacious defenders, shuttling forces across the Volga River just in time to counterattack and frustrate the Germans. So as this fight is just bogging down, and again, block by block, sewer by sewer, the whole thing, Germans are getting exhausted. Supply lines are pinched. They are really ground down. Soviet artillery and air start pounding away at them because they have kind of refuge on the other side of the Volga River. And just as the Germans are totally exhausted and overextended, Stalin launches a brilliant counterattack on the weakly held flanks. The flanks are held by Romanians and Hungarians, not the first-rate German troops. So within 3 days, they surround the German 6th Army and most of the 4th Panzer Army, which are the two primary units attacking Stalingrad. Hitler stubbornly refuses to let them attempt to break out because Hermann Göring, who you've probably heard that name before, convinces him that the Luftwaffe could resupply these cut-off forces. But they never could even get close. So they try to hold, but it's inevitable. They're surrounded. After 5 weeks of freezing and starvation, they surrender. So 90,000 Germans are marched off to concentration camps. Only 5,000 would survive the war. But this massive battle produced 400,000 German casualties, and probably it's estimated about 1 million Soviet casualties. So it is a massive killing field in Stalingrad, and Hitler allows it to happen. But after Stalingrad, the Soviets regain the initiative, and they just start pushing Hitler back in the long march to Berlin. So, I mean, this was a major blow to Germany and changed the course of the war.
It did. It truly did. And the Germans didn't do anything to try to win the hearts of the Russian people who might have helped them.
No, they really didn't. They thought that they could be liberators, but it just didn't work out. They were pretty cruel. And they really were putting down any insurgencies in their rear. And so they didn't make a lot of friends doing this. That's for sure.
Indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillan on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Okay, Chris, that's Stalingrad. We'll all be sure not to be in one of those again. We got a minute left. Tell us about Battle Digest.
So Battle Digest is really the best way to learn this kind of history in a concise format. I know your audience appreciates military history and the lessons of history. It's important to know, as we all know, but it's not always easy to read the 300-page books on every battle. So what I've done is I've condensed it all into the Reader's Digest version with maps and graphics and everything. And they're like 30-minute reads to really digest all the key events. So I hope your listeners would look at battledigest.com. My website explains everything, how to order and subscribe and whatnot, but battledigest.com.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for your great review. God bless you, bro.
Thanks, Denny. You too. Always a pleasure.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillam. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 64 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com, 10% off promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillam. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Marine Dad Bill wants to know if there is anything good for our nation by allowing all these illegal aliens to come here.
Bill, no, there's not, that I'm aware of. The result of the illegals being here is in almost every case bad for us.
And Marine vet, oh, Colonel, two Marines. That's fantastic. Yeah.
I wondered where the crayons went.
Okay. Marine vet Mark really appreciated the discussion on DEI. He knew it was evil, but he needed to learn the details.
Mark, well said. We all need to know the facts as we make decisions. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 19 February 1943, 10 weeks after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, Franklin Delano Roosevelt authorized the removal of any or all people from military areas as deemed necessary or desirable. The military, in turn, defined the entire West Coast, home to the majority of Americans of Japanese ancestry or citizenship, as a military area. By June, over 110,000 Japanese Americans were relocated to remote internment camps built by our military in scattered locations across the country. For the next 2.5 years, many of these Japanese Americans endured extremely difficult living conditions and poor treatment by their military guards. On December 17, 1944, it was declared that effective January 2, 1945, Japanese American evacuees from the West Coast could return to their homes. During World War II, 10 Americans were convicted of spying for Japan, but not one of them was of Japanese ancestry. In 1988, President Ronald Reagan signed a bill to recompense each surviving internee with a tax-free check for $20,000 and an apology from our government.
Indeed. And on 19 February 1945, during World War II, our Marines invaded Iwo Jima. Iwo Jima was a barren Pacific island guarded by a Japanese artillery, but to our military, it was prime real estate on which to build airfields to launch bombing raids against Japan, which was only 660 miles away. We began applying pressure on the Japanese defenders in February 1944, when B-24 and B-25 bombers raided the islands for 74 days. It was the longest pre-invasion bombardment of the war, necessary because of the extent to which the Japanese, 21,000 strong, fortified the island above and below ground, including a network of caves. Underwater demolition teams, then called frogmen, were dispatched just before the actual invasion. When the Japanese fired on the frogmen, they gave away their secret gun positions. The amphibious landings of the Marines began on the morning of February 19th. As the Marines made their way onto the island, seven Japanese battalions opened fire on them. By evening, over 550 Marines were dead and 1,800 wounded. The capture of Mount Suribachi, the highest point on the island and the bastion of the Japanese defense, took four more days and many more casualties. When the American flag was finally raised on Iwo Jima, the memorable image was captured by a famous photographer and later won the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, I love that monument, Iwo Jima War Memorial. It's just awesome.
It is indeed, and should be.
And on 20 February 1942, during World War II, Lieutenant Edward O'Hare took off from the aircraft carrier Lexington in a raid against the Japanese at Rabaul, and minutes later became America's first flying ace. The Lexington sailed into the Coral Sea, where Rabaul, a town at the very tip of New Britain, one of the islands comprising the Bismarck Archipelago, had been invaded in January by the Japanese and transformed into a huge airbase. The Japanese were now in prime striking position for the Solomon Islands, next on the agenda for expanding their ever-growing Pacific Empire. The Lexington's mission was to destabilize the Japanese position on Rabaul with a bombing raid. Aboard the Lexington was Navy fighter pilot Lieutenant Edward O'Hare, attached to Fighting Squadron 3. As the Lexington left Bougainville, the largest of the Solomon Islands, for Rabaul, ship radar picked up Japanese bombers headed straight for the carrier. O'Hare and his team went into action piloting F-4F Wildcats. In a mere 4 minutes, O'Hare shot down five Japanese Betty bombers, bringing a swift end to the Japanese attack and earning O'Hare the designation ace, given to any pilot who had downed five or more downed enemy planes. Although the Lexington blew back the Japanese bombers, the element of surprise was gone, and the raid on Rabaul was aborted for the time being. O'Hare was awarded the Medal of Honor for his bravery and excellent aim.
Amazing. And on 22 February 1944, President Franklin Roosevelt ordered General Douglas MacArthur out of the Philippines as our defense of the islands collapsed. When the Japanese invaded China in 1937 and signed the Tripartite Pact with Germany and Italy in 1940, we responded by strengthening the defense of the Philippines. General MacArthur was called out of retirement to command 10,000 American Army troops, 12,000 Filipino enlisted men who fought as part of our army, and 100,000 Filipino soldiers. MacArthur overestimated his troops' strength and underestimated Japan's determination. Our defensive strategy for U.S. interests in the Pacific required MacArthur withdraw his troops into the mountains of the Bataan Peninsula and await American reinforcements. Instead, MacArthur decided to take the Japanese on head-to-head. On the day Pearl Harbor was bombed, the Japanese destroyed almost half of all our aircraft based in the Philippines. Amphibious landings of the Japanese followed. By late December, MacArthur had to pull his forces back defensively to the Bataan Peninsula. By 2 January 1942, the Philippine capital of Manila fell to the Japanese. A message arrived on February 20th ordering MacArthur to leave immediately for Mindanao and then to Melbourne, Australia, where, quote, you will assume command of all U.S. troops. MacArthur at first balked. He wanted to fight alongside the men to the death if necessary. MacArthur finally obeyed the order in March. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a mother drew a gun to drive off two people who were trying to abduct her son in a Des Moines skywalk. Shay Lindberg, who was armed with two homeless people, Lori Potter, 56, and Michael Ross, 43, allegedly tried to take her child. Potter began waving at her son and told Lindberg to give her back her son, who had crouched down next to the child, saying she was his real mother. She then grabbed the child by the arm to lead him away. The real mother then drew her legally owned pistol and told him to stop. They let the child go and fled the building. They've since been arrested and charged with felony child stealing.
Thanks, Colonel. Last night, I watched the movie Sound of Freedom, all about international child sex trafficking, and it really opened my eyes. It also made this tough old Marine cry, but don't tell anyone. I always cringe when I see people not watching their children carefully. Sometimes I see small children sitting alone in cars outside a gas station or a store. Folks, this is just not a good idea. Our children need to be protected at all costs. But the mother in today's story stands as a prime example on how to do everything right. First, she was watching her child like a hawk. Because of that, she saw and recognized the danger. She had great situational awareness. Second, when her child was in danger, she didn't hesitate to draw her gun. This tells me that she loves her child and is willing to risk her own life and also take the life of another who's trying to hurt her family. One thing I tell my students is this: take time to figure out what is worth dying for. For me, it's simple. I'm willing to die for God, family, and country in that order. But you need to start thinking about that now before something bad happens. And third, she knew the laws of her jurisdiction. She knew that it was legal for her to use deadly force to stop felony kidnapping. She brandished the gun and the attack ended. Brandishing means to show or wave about in a threatening manner. About 40% of the time, citizens who brandish their guns stop the crime. This is called a psychological stop. However, you must be prepared to physically stop the other 60%. This mother is a fine example for all of us to follow. She was brave, vigilant, and acted with confidence. Because of that, her child is safe and in the arms of a loving mother instead of living on the streets with two crazy homeless people. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this woman and encourages all parents to follow her fine example as a protector and a defender.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is Alternative Math. It's really cool. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link, and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, David Horowitz will discuss the reasons why our military might become disloyal. And then former DEA agent Van Nguyen will discuss drugs in America. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase the book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us on the Foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.